Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Ben Mack, and to kick things off, I'm going to have Mark Horn do his signature introduction. Mark?
Well, folks, the clock on the clubhouse wall says it's time to get started, so let's get started.
Awesome. My name is Ben Mack. My partner in crime is Mark Horn, and tonight we are honored to bring a special guest to you live, Dr. Kevin Hogan. Kevin Hogan holds a doctorate in psychology and is the author of 11 books and counting. He is body language expert and unconscious influence expert. He's been touted on shows in the, on BBC, in the New York Post, and dozens of popular magazines like In Touch, First for Women, and Success, including Cosmopolitan. He has become the go-to resource for analyzing key White House figures. He's an expert in all faces of persuasion. Will you please help me welcome to the program the great Dr. Kevin Hogan. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hey, Ben, how are you doing?
I'm fantastic tonight. Thank you so much for asking. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. We're here. We got a cloudy evening in Minneapolis, but all is good. Working hard, very excited always to talk to you, and want to thank you in front of your listeners here for the incredible you were so dynamic and so wonderful at boot camp in Las Vegas last month, or 2 months ago now, I guess it was. But we've gotten feedback back, and everybody was so ecstatic to have you there and to listen to what you had to share. It was just awesome. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
You are welcome. It was an honor and privilege to be there. I felt like it was a graduation in a certain element to be invited onto your stage. I've always held that as one of the benchmarks of achievement of being invited to speak at your boot camp. Thank you, Kevin, for including me.
It was a great experience. It was really wonderful. So yeah, that was all good for sure.
Now I know that you are a little bit nervous coming on another program with me and folks online. They're excited to get your technology about how you create a cult-like following, but even me bringing up that you were slightly nervous elicited a laugh from you. Would you share with our listeners what this tension is about, why I possibly make you nervous bringing you on my stage in front of a live audience?
Well, I think Ben makes anybody nervous, you guys. but Ben's funny. I mean, Ben's always thinking about something that you're not, whatever that is. So whatever you're thinking about Chicago, he's thinking about Honolulu. You're thinking about, the North Star, and he's thinking about the Southern Cross. So about, 2 years ago, Ben asked me to be on a show he was doing, and I was happy to do it. And I was prepared to talk about persuasion and, simple things like that. And the very first question he asked me is, Dr. Hogan, do you think that marketing is the face of magic? Something along those lines. And I was like, oh, God, what did I get myself into here? So I finally walked my way through this 3-4 minute monologue of trying to figure out why marketing could be the face of
the legitimate face of magic.
Legitimate face of magic. There you go. You remember the exact phrase. And I felt really, I was like breathing and sighing like I had run a marathon when I was done with the question. And then you said, okay, that's all really cool and fine what you said, but what about if magic had a K at the end of it, like M-A-G-I-C-K? And I'm like, oh, good, now we're going to go to Crowley. So, I'm like, oh, God, And at this point, I really did, I'm like, okay, rituals and ceremony and I was like, yes, marketing has a lot to do with it, and anybody would be, I don't know. And so I walked myself through 10 minutes. So normally, I never ask someone to send a list of questions or, even a topic, whatever. But with Ben, that's an exception this tonight. He didn't do it, by the way, you guys. He didn't send any questions or even what we were going to talk about beyond some of the tools that I use to develop really good relationships with a lot of people.
And tonight we want to learn your tools, and specifically I want to exploit you and your tools to help me create a cult.
Okay. Why not?
I'm building a cult with the help of Mark Horn, and it's on Facebook, and people can find it by going to going to Invisible Branding. I'm working on guerrilla information marketing, going to invisiblebranding.com, will actually take people to a replay of this call. Because invisible persuasion is one of your expertise. Am I correct in that?
I think that's a pretty fair statement.
Now, you have what I will call a cult following.
I think you could say that. I think that's probably fair, and I think most people are probably okay with that, that are, you know, that get, you know, my newsletter, for example, or come to my events, things like that. I think it's actually kind of a fun way to look at it. And if you want to get technical in terminology, may not be a perfect example, but it's probably pretty close.
You have how many people that receive your weekly newsletter about coffee, and can you talk a little bit about just what kind of loyal followers you've been able to cultivate?
Yeah, you know, we don't talk about three things here. One of them is the size of a list, because there are no lists, but we have a whole bunch of cool people that we're in our ninth year now with Coffee with Kevin Hogan. That's the name of the e-zine that I've been sending out. And, you know, the funny thing is, Ben, is when I started Coffee with Kevin Hogan, and I know this doesn't sound fascinating, guys, so give me like 5 minutes as a warm-up, because it really takes a little bit of setup to understand how this all works. But Coffee is now 9 years old, and I've been writing Coffee every single week, this e-zine, this approximately 12 to 14-page e-zine, from scratch every single week for 9 years, with maybe 5 weeks as an exception over those 9 years. And it's a pretty cool tool. It allows me to connect with people on a friend basis almost, because the idea is that, you know, I'm sitting here with Shell or with Mark or Ben, and we're all sitting down having coffee. And so, therefore, that opens up some parameters and some conversations that wouldn't take place like it on a corporate stage. I can actually talk to you about what I thought about, you know, maybe the presidential election or the you know, the last episode of Survivor or 24 or Lost or whatever's cool going on in the news today. We can talk about things that have nothing to do with business and have fun and connect. And then that connection point, that first paragraph and only paragraph of connection, is a really cool way for people to get to know who you are. And then you get what I call a self-selecting group of people that are interested in your work, in you as a person. You find some people become inflamed by you, and by that I mean, you know, I can be a little inflammatory. Ben's a lot inflammatory. But see, the thing is that the heavier that you polarize someone, you know, you're next to somebody who's polarizing another group of people away from you, that increases the number of people who are likely to be tightly knit to you. So, for example, I'm not a real big fan of the movie The Secret, okay, the book The Secret. In fact, it's a horrifying concept to me, and I wrote with Dave Lacani and Bob Beverly.
Blair Warren.
Yeah. Good people, smart people. I mean, you guys are smart. And we put together a really good book to explain why this is not only is this just not true, but it's not cool. It's not a good thing to have going around. See, it's like a bad cult, you know. And so we put that out, and of course that polarizes. There's about 80% of the self-development community that wants then nothing to do with this group of people. But that really isn't very important, because when you're marketing something, when you're selling something, you're not, unless you're Bill Gates, you're not trying to sell every single person your product, service, experience, whatever it is you do. You really want, I always tell people, if you can have 1,000 people who are very interested in you, that in your work, that enjoy your presence, that like to be around you, that want to hang out with you, that's way better than having a list of 1,000,000 people. You know, Ben and I do these Amazon promos where you get 50 people all giving away a gift, and you know, I hear all the time, it's like, oh, yes, on my list I've got 7 million people or some stupid number that's irrelevant. And the size of a person's list is essentially insignificant. It means nothing. So all you guys out there who are marketing who have only 500 people that are actually going to receive an email from you this week, maybe Ben's showing you how to do emailing and how to develop a following, that's all you need. I mean, 500 people over, my word, I mean, that's a wonderful start. And it doesn't have to get enormous for you to develop a six-figure income. And you really don't even have to get to 100,000 to develop a seven-figure income. It's really what you do with your communication with those people and how you communicate to them that's going to determine what your income is going to be, okay? okay? So you really want to develop cool relationship, let people see who you are, be transparent. Ben is pretty transparent out there, you know? And so, people, when I invite Ben to come and talk in Las Vegas, it's like I know precisely who I'm going to get. I'm going to get a very authentic, real person who will be polite, you know, on command if necessary. But generally speaking, that's not part of the deal. It's like I'm okay with people being pretty much, not always, but pretty much who they really are in real life, because that's what you really want. Women have used this word authenticity for years, and it's just catching on as a real relevant concept in marketing. And if you're building a cult, you really want to be, authentic, because the more authentic you are, the more real you are as a person to a group of people, the easier it is to be polarized to you. Most people are politically correct, so it's really hard to have people polarized to you. If you don't get unsubscribes on your emails, you've done something wrong. Okay? And that's essentially the deal. So when I don't get unsubscribes, and this is a very fine balance that you're always trying to work out. You always want to see like 50 unsubscribes a week or 100 unsubscribes, because then you know you're hitting just enough emotional buttons to cause maybe 7 people a day to unsubscribe. But what happens with that same slight emotional intensity, you're developing strong connection with the thousands of people that you are connecting with, and that's where it's all cool. People go, oh, I want to be like Kevin because he, and then they fill in a blank, because he lives a decent life with, and he loves his kids, and he gets to go to Las Vegas and have fun, and he gets to go to the Playboy Mansion, and all this kind of stuff. And there's little things that people associate. And those are all things they'd love to talk about at work, but they can't because it's not cool to talk about some of these things, supposedly. Okay, so by being normal, politically incorrect, evolutionary, who you are as a human being, you actually win an enormous following. By being politically correct and being perfect for everybody, you basically become an office drone, forgive the term, but somebody who's going to be required to sit in a cubicle for the rest of their life, and that is the majority of the people in this country. So the first thing is really allow yourself to be who you are. You don't need to emulate me or Ben Mack or Mark Horn or anybody else. Really be you. And if you really want to develop the, quote, cult-like following, then allow that some of those points who you are to come out strong, Pick those points that you want people to see about you. What are those things that are cool about you that would appeal to a group of people, okay, that would allow them to identify with you? And, where are you connecting with people? If you're a big Barack Obama supporter, great, there you go. So Barack Obama, that's cool. And so you talk about it and you hit it hard and you're like, you know what, I love what Obama did this week. I'm not an Obama supporter at all. But Ben, did you see the article or the new story today where he called a gal sweetie?
I missed that one, but I've been excited to interject something that might take us off this train of thought. Would you roll with my flow for a second?
Sure, call.
And we're not selling anything on this one, so it's like
no,
we don't have to go.
Not.
Yeah, but you were bringing up the size of lists and unsubscribes. The last time that I had a major group of people unsubscribe to my list, I sent out an email that said 7 lies men tell themselves.
What happened?
Well, the 7 lies were, number 7, it's not the size of the list, it's the magic within it. Number 6, book publishers, agents, and launch partners don't really care whether or not you have a list. No, the quality of your writing is what sells books, not friends with big lists. Number 5, it's not the size of your list, but your stamina. Number 4, when you're JVing with somebody new, they aren't thinking about the size of your list. Number 3, you don't need a big list if you drive a Mercedes. Number 2, some girls prefer a small list. And number 1, my list is usually bigger.
Right. Okay, so let's attack a few of those. First of all, my list is definitely not bigger. So I'll start there. So I pose no threat to anyone. And that's a beautiful email. The fact is that the way most people build a list is not how you build a cult, and there's a big difference. To build a list is a very, very simple thing to do. It requires no brain power whatsoever. You get 1,000 JV partners, and that doesn't take very long nowadays. You can do that on Facebook. You get 100 people, you know, list people, list type people, people who just, you know, they're not devoted followers, people who read something. But I'll tell you what, I've seen literally people with million-person lists, and they'll sell 10 books on Amazon. It's not really what sells. What sells is to have 10,000 people on, quote, a list, and have those people have a really strong connection with the person or the, well, the person, that cult-like following. And those cult-like followings, those people, 10,000 people in a cult-like following will buy 500 or 1,000 books because you suggested or encourage it, whereas, you know, if you've just got a generic list of, and there's nothing that connects the people, then it really doesn't matter all that much. I mean, people write me all the time. They say, Kevin, I've got a list of 3 million or 2 million or 1 million or we're connecting with a million people altogether. I don't care. I just did a JV with somebody who she wrote a book, and it was she had 1.5 million people on the list, and we got 11 people to come to our website. 6 weeks ago, we did a promo with somebody who didn't claim any list size at all. And I never ask because I don't care how big somebody's list is. I really don't care. It's really what is the attachability factor? What is that persona, the power that emanates from the person, you know? I'll use Lacani. He's probably not listening, so that's a good thing. If I would rather have talked to 1,000 Dave Lacani followers than I would 100,000 Bob Proctor followers or somebody who, you know, is really just sort of milquetoast. I like people who actually have a personality, who are strong. Those are the people who, if you just have a few followers around that person, those people will do what that person says to do because they trust him and they know it. So I love your email. I love the concept. But, you know, from a tactical standpoint, I would say that it's not relevant to have a huge list, so to speak. You know,
I saw Lacani had an article in Coffee last week, and I'm curious about when creating your own cult, how often do you have guest cult speakers?
Really? Oh, boy, not very often. You don't like to wear off the magic that is within you. So if, you know, Dave is a good friend, and the reason that we're friends is because evolutionarily what? We help each other and we're valuable to each other. We care about each other. We have some similar, not only interests, but things that are important to us in life as well. And so, you know, he says, you know, I'll help you, you know, promote your new book, whatever book just came out. And by the way, did you know that it's 19 books now? that PR piece that you have is old, dude. So,
you know where I stole it from?
Oh, probably our bio page. I got to talk to Ann tomorrow morning. But anyway, so where was it? Oh, Lacani. So yeah, you take a powerful person who's a strong, not necessarily powerful in terms of like he's got a huge following, but the people that follow Dave Lacani's work, that's a very strong base of people who are going to be very loyal. They're the kind of people who are going to say the only person who's really any good in persuasion is Dave Lacani. So when you get somebody who's that strong and you say, sure, I'll let you go ahead and, you know, put an article in Coffee. I do it so rarely. I think I've done that maybe, I don't want to exaggerate, maybe 10 times in the last 10 years, you know, maybe.
Wow.
It's not something I like to do. I really like to capture and hold an audience. And I've been in a cult before, much like Dave has. And so when you watch how a cult works from the inside, you see how it can be effective and how you can maintain readers. And one of the things you don't do is bring in your, quote, competitor, quote, unquote, and have them, you know, put them in front of your audience. So to have Dave or you at a live event is typically something I would not have done 5 years ago. I used to do all these boot camps with just one other person, and that person was what I call my lunch relief, you know. I would talk all day, all night, and I would have one person there right after lunch. And frankly, and I'm telling you this because this is the subject of the call, right? Because when you come back from lunch, you feel satisfied. You feel your carbs hit serotonin. Serotonin hits this sort of calming, soothing feeling. You get a little tired. It's groggy. It's like post-sex, okay? You just had sex. You know, you had chocolate. It's the same thing. I mean, sort of. And you feel calm. And this is not when you want to be having Kevin Hogan in front of your audience. Now is when I want my partner, my co-trainer in front of the audience. And then I'll come back on an hour and a half later after the blood sugar levels have all leveled out and everything's back, and now people are once again craving and desirous, and they're not calm, and now they're restless for information. And that's when you want to go back on and be energized. And you give another person a break, but at the same time, they serve a very strong purpose at creating distance. Nobody can compare with you. If you put them on after lunch, you're on before lunch, nothing can compare with you, all things being equal. That was a lot to do in 30 seconds, was it?
I want to dig down into the distinction between a cult versus other things. I mean, it's like when I look at a religion, you know, I come at things from a memetic perspective. And when I look at a religion, it to me is the type of idea that presents itself as sharing, knowing reality, and that there is an extraordinary downside from questioning or leaving that reality. Is what you do to create a cult-like following with Coffee with Kevin Hogan, is it similar to that definition of a religion or of a cult?
I think in some ways it is. I think it would certainly be, you know, really disingenuous of me to say otherwise. But let's just talk how it is similar and some of the things that are really important. I mean, a cult is a closed system, okay? So, you know, one of the great cult creators of all time is Mark Joyner. Mark, and he's a dear friend, and I love him very much. And as I watch all of the things that Mark does, he does them all perfectly. And he does all of the things right to make various marketing and business cults. And the concept of having a cult and followers in a cult is not a bad thing. It's actually quite a good thing if you trust the person at the front of the group. If you don't, then it's a whole different story. But when you're the dynamic person in the marketing cult, for example, so here's, say, Ben Mack, you know, and then you're part of the Ben Mack cult. Well, I'm part of the Ben Mack cult, too. You know, I'm pretty fascinated by this guy, and I'll do a lot of the things, or even if I don't do them, I will confidently say, hey, you know what, April, this one is for you. You do this because this strategy will work for you. It wouldn't work on my business model. There's a lot of stuff that doesn't work on business model or cult model A that would definitely work on business model B. And I know that sounds kind of weird. People are always wanting to look at the secret, you know. I mean, I'm not talking about Rhonda's book. I'm just talking in general. People always want the marketing secret or whatever. But the fact is there's actually models. There's systems that produce results, and there's several different effective strategies and cult type models where you can have a closed system. You do want people to come into your business. You want them to follow you. You want them to follow your advice. Greatest way to build a strong cult to where people put their trust into you is to be right a lot. So if I say, you know what, Ben Mack is coming to Vegas, he's going to be interesting, entertaining, beware, he might offend, and let that be okay, but focus on the things that he has to say that are awesome, that you can implement and change in your business. Now I've preset the stage, whereas maybe they would have just been frustrated and gone, God, he's just a little odd the way he dressed today. I mean, you can tell that story later on, and all those kind of things. But the thing is that I've established the tone, okay? If I don't establish the tone, you probably won't be accepted all that well. We had a very special guest speaker who's incredibly well-known at boot camp this year, and he only got a moderate reception. I mean, this is the person, one of the people on earth who's written way more books than I have as far as total books sold. I think we mentioned it was 100 times as many books sold. So, but his reception was only 20 or 30% of what I would experience that weekend, and actually you and Dave got better receptions than this wonderful man did because of the cult-like following, okay? So he walks into Kevin's cult and then into the subcult of Ben and the subcult of Dave, and those are approved by Kevin Hogan. But actually, I never said anything about this other gentleman's, approval. And you could tell, you could feel it in the room, how wonderful it was to have this person here. But it was like, as cool it was a celebrity moment instead of a following moment. And so it's how you set up the relationship. It's you being right. Ben Mack says, go buy this product. It will do well for you in this respect. Trust me. And it's like I always tell people, trust me the first time. If I'm ever wrong, don't listen to me again. Okay, mm-hmm. It's that simple. And then you just make damn sure that you're right when you're bringing somebody in to speak or to write that guest column or whatever it is. If you're going to bring somebody into your group, you need to make sure they're going to be really, really, really good for your group and that your group is going to connect with that person. Or even if they don't connect, that their information is so good or that the what they provide as far as value or that they can what I call identity, where people can identify with something. You know, like women who wear Victoria's Secret lingerie. It's 7, 8, 9, 10 times as expensive as other lingerie. Arguably, you could argue that all lingerie is fairly similar in a lot of ways, but if you talk to women, they'll tell you, no, Victoria's Secret lingerie is very special. Okay, it's very special. That's an identity experience. It's not a value experience. It's an identity experience. So is whatever you're selling part of an identity? Does it make you part of the club or part of the cult? Does it make you part of the closed system, the Masons, the Freemasons, that you have to actually go through levels to get into? Do you have a gold circle, which is not so hard to access, but do you have a platinum circle that takes a hell of a lot more? Kevin gets 3 emails today for people saying, can I get into platinum? No. And part of that, strategically, intellectually, is if I say no to 3, well, how many people did we say no to at boot camp? 11 in a row before we took one person. All of a sudden, those 11 people go home and they tell 11 other people, Kevin wouldn't even take my money and let me into the inner circle. That's correct. Now, there's actual good reasons not to, but the point is that creates this sort of compelling, damn it, take my money for goodness sakes, Kevin. What the heck are you doing? I want to be there. Well, you know, I only want certain kinds of people because certain kinds of people build long-term better cults, if you were. Now, this is your word tonight, not mine necessarily. But
yeah, you know, you say that, and yet I look at the title of your books, Covert Persuasion, The Psychology of Persuasion, How to Persuade Others to Your Way of Thinking, and yet you distance yourself from Ben's word cult. Oh yeah. Ben's using this label cult to sort of superimpose on my things. But when you write books like How to Persuade Others to Your Way of Thinking, this sounds like not just cult like, that sounds like you're selling Kool-Aid. You know, that you don't get much more cultish than Covert Persuasion and How to Persuade Others to Your Way of Thinking.
Sure, I think that's fair. The concept of covert persuasion or any kinds of persuasion that I do, which are basically inherently everything that I do is I started out as a therapist. You know, that's sort of where I originated. I was a psychotherapist using hypnosis mostly as the modality that I used. And when you're doing that kind of therapy, people are coming for you because, A, they can't change by themselves, or they believe that they can't change by themselves. And so essentially what you're doing is you're causing people to change with or without their permission. And so people smoke, and you're basically working in an intentionally manipulative way, in a very strategic way, to create change in that person, whether they're losing weight or smoking or whatever the heck it is. I mean, there's a million things that people want to change and adjust the way that their life patterns are working. Very tough stuff to change. So when that's your background, and that is my background, you're constantly trying to think and maneuver inside of other people's heads, and how can I get people to do that? And that's a good place to be learning and how to do that stuff. But again, it all comes back down to, and cult is not a bad word, actually. I mean, I don't want to do that. I mean, here, after all, the people in, we just took, 400, and I say we, I'm talking about the United States, 467 women, age 15 to 60, and we stole their children from them. Why? Because they were a cult, right? So it's, you got all these cult women who had these spacey looks on their faces. Really? Or could it be that we just took all their children away, right? So the very fact that this group of people who are completely peaceful, living inside of a very small town, you know, basically a town of 1,500 people in a very closed area, sure, it's a cult, but who cares? They're decent people who aren't hurting the community, who arguably are actually helping it. And frankly, as I tell most people, I'd rather have those people as my next-door neighbors than the people I currently do have. So, yes, I'm okay with most cults, and actually I'm okay with having most of them next door. And I only move away from it a little bit in that I don't like to see people do things to people that aren't cool. I like to see people do things to people that are cool, that are going to, you know, advance them in some way or create some positive change. And that's all cool. So for whatever it matters, that's the distinction.
Okay. Yeah, when they say that, first of all, one of the definitions I read about a cult is that cults will always deny that they're a cult.
I think that's right. I think that when you look at the religious cults, all of them, I mean, a cult, you know, you ever see the BC comic strip? You know, BC?
Sure, absolutely. Okay.
BC was writing one of his definitions one day, and it says cult, you know, a church down the street from yours. I like that, okay? No, nobody wants to say they're a cult because it sounds so weird and spooky and freaky, but the fact is that anytime you have control over somebody else's decision-making process, that's pretty much an arguable point for a cult, okay? So let's call it what it is. The Catholic Church is a very large cult. The Muslim religion is a very large cult. Now I'm going to have everybody shooting at me on Tuesday morning. You know, all religions are cults. They're all groups. And the only way that we can create hatred is by saying that, oh, you're a cult, dude. We're the right guys. You guys are all really weird, you know.
The other element that seems to be uniform in terms of the identification of a cult is having a charismatic leader.
Yeah, that's it's tough when you look at like Scientology and you see them since Hubbard died in 84.
Mm-hmm.
Been tougher for them to really have a strong following. Tom Cruise has sort of filled in this sort of pseudo leadership kind of a role to where people will follow him, but it's not quite the same thing. L. Ron Hubbard really was not charismatic, nothing compared to Tom Cruise. But for whatever reason, people did start to connect that value of feeling better after auditing and Dianetic auditing to him. He dies. They don't even want to say that he died. I mean, they let him, quote, live for like 4 more years after he really died, so to speak. And then, but after that, it was a mess because so that the church has to hustle, their group, cult, whatever you want to call it, has to hustle to try to figure out a new marketing strategy. Because the charismatic leader, the Garner Ted Armstrong or the, you know, pick a church, any church, you know, the Pope or whoever has died and you now got a new system. Yeah, the charismatic leader is very important. And
The reason why I bring this up is that you, my friend, Dr. Hogan, fit both of these. One is that you tend to say, oh, yeah, Ben's using this term cult. I don't have a cult over here. And then you're a charismatic leader. You wrote the book, Irresistible Attraction, Secrets of Personal Magnetism.
Dastardly. I think you're right. Stop
structurally, you have a cult going on.
Sure. Okay, so let's go for that. That's good. Now what do you want to do? Should we work on getting the same thing replicated? I'd argue with you, but it's 9 o'clock at night. It's easier to argue at like 2 in the afternoon by email. Oh, goodness.
All right, so you've got a cult. Other people, I imagine, want to start cults for, you know, if nothing else, for the tax benefits. Having a church gives you extraordinary tax benefits.
I think that's right. You know, so develop a personality. That's the first thing. Is don't think in terms of a marketing strategy. Think in terms of what is your personality. You know, what does Dave Lacani come across as, or what does Ben Mack come across as, or Kevin Hogan? What is that persona? And with all three, say of us, it's a very real thing. It's like who we are. You know, it's that person with certain characteristics magnified that people attach to and that fill them up inside, that make them feel, you know, connected, if you will. And that's what you're looking for, you know. For you, you'll polarize people. You'll say, oh, you know, like these are real big stretches, like the government does weird shit, right? Can you say that on phone? I don't know. But the government does a lot of weird stuff, right? And so you'll actually say the government does these things. And there's a lot of people who go, hey, he's telling the truth. He's the first person that I've heard that says that. And that charismatic point of view, that argument, that the ability to stand up and point the finger at somebody else is something that draws people to you. Finding the common enemy causes people around you to come closer to you. And, you know, if you want, yeah, that's absolutely correct. And that's really where you want to start. Who do you want to be? Who do you want to project yourself as? And the best thing to do is to stick with who you are and then find the cool parts of you, the interesting parts that will connect with people. They don't have to be like you. That's a big error. You don't want to replicate yourself. You want people who you feel an experience or a need for them, you know, maybe one or two. You don't have to try to duplicate yourself. That would get old, and it's actually not very profitable either. Trying to find two Ben Macks in the same room is not so easy to do.
So we're going to, if it's okay with you, we're going to invite questions from our listeners. Would that be all right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. And in a moment, we're going to start with Mark Horn. And Mark, correct me if I'm wrong. I often get the digit. Is it 5-star that people will use to raise their hand if they're listening live?
Yes, Ben, 5-star will raise their hand.
Perfect. And if you're listening on the live audio that's streaming, you can enter your question through the text box there. We're going to be off promptly at 15 past the hour, so we're going to go through the questions possibly quite quickly. Before we get to the questions, Kevin, I believe, and this might be putting you on the spot, and it's fine either way, but I think you read my novel, Poker Without Cards.
No, you never sent me that one, so I can't claim to fame on that one. You must send me that book.
I'd be delighted to. It was my first online viral hit, if you will. We got 300,000 people that we could see download that book in the first year that it was out, and
wow.
It was up on Pirate Bay and a bunch of other places. So there's certainly
that's cool. Now there's a cool strategy right there, right? You know, but by the way, putting things, you know, like in making it so, you know, you're almost encouraging that the theft of that book. Like, what was it? Who was the gal who wrote the book that says, steal this book? Oh, golly.
I thought the first person was Abby Hoffman.
There you go.
Yeah.
And she came up with the idea, and it's a great idea. And the concept, for all you guys who are listening who are, like, young and not old like Ben and I, the idea is to actually tell people that it's okay to steal this. And it sort of appeals to that part of us that wants to do just those kind of things. And if you put it up on Pirate Bay, well, that's kind of the same concept, and that's a great strategy. People love stuff that they've ill-gotten sometimes. A lot of emotion attached to that.
And with that, Mark, let me turn it over to you to ask the first question of the evening. In what ways might Dr. Hogan be of service to answer a question for you?
Thank you, Ben. Kevin, the question that I have surrounds coffee with Kevin Hogan. I know you always invite us for coffee, and you prefer a ginger peach tea. Is that part of a cult-like imagery that you're creating there? Or can you speak to that just for a moment?
Yeah, for everybody who doesn't receive this e-zine, what Mark is simply asking is at the beginning of the e-zine, it says, you know, welcome to Coffee with Kevin Hogan. I'll have, you know, thanks for joining me. I'll have ginger peach tea, my favorite. And, of course, you're thinking, now, what a stupid thing, and why is that relevant? Well, the thing is that this is repeated every week for 9 years, okay? So every single Monday morning, you receive Kevin's e-zine, Kevin Hogan's e-zine. It says, you know, thanks for joining me for coffee. I'll have ginger peach tea, my favorite. So what I've accomplished here is a few things. After a person's read coffee 6-7 times, we all love to go to have coffee with somebody. We all love to go sit down at Starbucks, kick back and relax, and talk with friends. A, that's cool, okay? B, the next thing is coffee is such a universal thing that when you're invited for coffee, you can always invite people for coffee. But here's the thing. People in London are not real big on coffee. They really, really, really like tea. And I do a lot of business in Europe. You go to Europe and you sit down for breakfast and you ask for coffee, and sometimes they look at you like you're funny. You ask for Earl Grey tea or English breakfast, all of a sudden, oh, it's like, that's cool. So one day, 10 years ago, 8 years ago, whatever it was, I was just trying a new tea kind. I just had gone to Barnes & Noble, which is the only place that I'm aware of that you can buy ginger peach tea, and it's a Republic of Tea brand. It actually is pretty good, and I'm like, oh, that's good. And I gave it a little bit to my son, who was just a little kid at the time. He liked it. And so all of a sudden, I'm like, God, I think this is cool. And within, like, 3 days of having that, I was writing the equivalent of coffee in those days. It wasn't quite coffee yet. But I thought, you know what? We'll put this in. We'll appeal to the Euro, and we'll appeal to the United States. And then we'll put ginger peach tea, which has this really effeminate quality to it. I don't know quite how to say it, but it's a very effeminate quality. Ginger peach tea, it's very not Kevin, okay? It's like, yeah, ginger peach tea. And I've had so many people write me over the years saying, you know, that sounds kind of gay, and I'm like, well, that's okay, you know, because what the heck? Wouldn't it be interesting if you did wonder? Because anytime people put energy into trying to figure you out, they're going to connect with you, which is a good thing. So here I've got coffee, I've got tea, and I've got ginger peach, which drives all these other thought processes in a very fascinating way. So I've basically created this link that whenever people think of coffee, it is very hard for these people, if they've read this e-zine a few times, maybe 3-4 times, to not think of Kevin Hogan. If they think of tea, it's very tough of them not to think of Kevin Hogan. If they think of Ginger Peach, I guarantee you there's only one thing they'll think of. And this is one of the things that causes these connections to, are so powerful in our minds. Coffee has a very strong scent to it. Tea has a scent to it. All these things are really powerful connectors. And even though the strategic concept of coffee with Kevin Hogan having ginger peach tea was not so profound maybe 8 years ago, today I would tell everybody to do something like that. Jeffrey Gitomer now does sales caffeine. Okay, again, the same concept. He came up with it like 2 years after coffee came out, and he's now, you talk about a big list, he's got a big list and a loyal following. Okay, so he's actually been able to merge the two together, which is not so easy to do. So coffee with Kevin Hogan. Yeah, welcome. Thanks for joining me for coffee. I'll have ginger peach tea. A lot of emotions in there, always question marks and curiosities, and irritation, too. It's like, Kevin, don't you ever drink anything other than ginger peach tea? And why do you always say that? And who cares? And these people, they get so frustrated, they keep reading week after week. It's a very wonderful thing.
It's not since the movie Heathers that I've heard about people questioning someone's sexual orientation based on their choice of beverage. It's fascinating that you have followers that...
I can't believe somebody else watched Heathers.
Yeah, it's a fantastic, fantastic movie. Chris from Fort Lauderdale asks, what is control versus influence? What's the difference? Chris asks, what's the difference between control and influence?
Depends on how good you are at it. There's not a lot. I mean, you know, regardless of your relationship with a person, you know, you really want to be able, if you know it's coming, like if you know the car's coming and the kid's in the road, you need control / influence, and I don't know that you need to differentiate the two. Control is pretty doggone similar. When you're doing hypnosis with somebody, you can sit there and claim and say all you want that I'm not in control, that you're in control. But I'll tell you what, when I get you in regression hypnosis, you're not moving and you're not going anywhere. And you can create any other belief you want on the outside to make it sound okay for the legal aspects, but but they're not moving.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be there, and they're going to be there until it's okay with you for them to not be there, usually at the end of the 90 minutes or whatever. Control is
a more intense version of influence?
I think that's right. I think it's the ultimate and the final piece. You know, it's what people crave and need. And when you are in control of some factor, some thing that they're doing, that can actually be a very appealing, powerful, cool, good thing, because people tend to be out of control in their lives. And one of the things, if you want to go back to the cult definition, one of the things that people crave is to have some kind of leadership, guidance, certainty, some kind of factor where they're just flat out positive that that's the right thing to do or the right way to go or the best thing, the most effective or whatever. So, yeah, control, they're almost synonymous, control being probably the final step in influence. And control is just fine. It's okay. There's nothing wrong with controlling somebody else's action. That's cool. It's okay.
And now from the 503 area code, who do we have the pleasure of joining us on the call?
You have the pleasure of speaking with Corey Lewis. How's it going, Ben?
Awesome, Corey Lewis. Thank you so much for coming on tonight. Welcome.
Yeah, no problem. My question is, you know, can you give us some tactics that, like, a list owner, say, like, in internet marketing could use to build rapport with their list? And, you know, turn it into more of a cult-like following rather than just kind of a generic internet marketing list.
Yeah, absolutely. If say that you've got 500 people and you're just starting out, would that be fair, Corey? I mean, is that or 1,000 or something like that?
My list is approaching 10,000. So.
Oh, well, so you're way huge. Okay, so you got 10,000 people. All right, mm-hmm. So if this week you have a chance to, one of the things that Ben is really good at and Randy Gage and all of the guys and a few of the gals, Alexander Brown's pretty good at this and not very many others, but all the guys are really good at is ranting. When people rant, what's called a rant, where you sort of listen to Jeffrey Gitomer rant, and a rant is really just an opinionated point of view on something. Now, if you can state your opinion on something, say that you've got a list of 10,000 people, okay, and you don't have a real strong connection with that group yet. Well, if you don't have a strong group with your 10,000 people, then I can promise you, I can tell you what your income so far is this year, and you don't want me to say it on the phone. It's not very good. As soon as we connect you with 50% of those people and connect you really really well with 50%. If we can get you to have the people open up 40% based on your subject line, you can test that. Okay, so now we get 40% open. Now, half of the people that open this thing, we want a connection with. So you're going to come out and you're going to say something that you believe to be true, like Barack Obama is a freaking idiot, or Hillary Clinton's an idiot, or George Bush is an idiot. That doesn't really do as well as it used to because everybody believes that. But things that split people in two, okay, where there's a clear dividing line. And whatever, you don't want to just do it for the purpose of being inflammatory. It can be inflammatory, but don't do it for that reason. Do it because you believe it to be true. Because whatever you put out there, you really do want it to represent you, or else you'll just come across as a fraud, which is, what's the point of that? Because then you got to start business all over 5 years from now. You got 10,000 people on your list. Turn them into a cult, you know, and start to say, you know what, that's stupid. I cannot believe what Barack Obama wants to do. He wants to go and put national health care. How friggin' stupid is that? Now, every single person who actually earns a living and pays taxes is going to have to pay twice as much, and we're going to go into a recession. If you don't believe that, if you believe the opposite, hey, you know, Barack Obama has the answer. But instead of saying something good about Obama, you're better off to find something to say about John McCain. Like, why the heck would you want John McCain as president? This guy is going to keep us in Iraq for how long? At $1 trillion a year? And who's going to pay those $100 trillion at the end of the 100 years? I don't think so. Didn't they call it a 100 years war once before? Did we figure anything out? Whatever the point is, wherever your standpoint is, whoever you are as a person, you know, you sit there and you go, okay, this is who I am, this is what I believe, and I believe it with, I mean, I'm positive, this is what is the smartest thing to do, and then tell people that. And then all of a sudden you get 150 unsubscribes, and your heart goes, oh, my God, Kevin better be right. Oh, but you know what? You just connected with 50% of the people that are on your readership, and those people will once again be looking because you mimicked their beliefs, okay? You literally came out and said who you are, what your standpoint is. You were clear-cut. The Secret, as a movie, is evil. It sucks. It's devastating to people's belief structures. It causes foreclosures on homes because people sit there and believe that they can have this amazingly huge house, and then they foolishly and stupidly follow some idiot leader who is telling them that this is actually okay to have this belief structure, that you don't have to work in order to get something. You just imagine it, feel really good inside and be grateful. The formula for a foreclosure, okay, that's what a foreclosure is. And say that and have the ability to say the truth, what you believe to be true. You put that out there and all of a sudden you have emails. People go, God, you know what, Corey? I read what you said today about The Secret, about Obama or McCain or whatever. Couldn't agree more. Nobody else will come out and say that, but you actually come out and say that, and that's so true. Now what you've done is you've validated 50% of your list, and you've torqued about 40% off, and you've lost 10%, of which we don't care, okay? Because the 10% or the 2% or 1%, really it's going to be about a half of a percent, that you lose is unimportant to you long term. Short term, you can always argue, God, I want those 500 people. It really doesn't matter. What you want are 5,000. You want half of your list to be super connected to you. And I know people always think in terms of numbers, just like we measure things in inches that are personal to us and all that kind of stuff. Right. The reality is that you want to have 5,000 people who are close to you. You don't even need that. 1,000 people will give you $100,000 a year income without any difficulty whatsoever. But in order to get that $100,000 in income, you need to connect with that 1,000 people, which is very easy to do when you have 100,000 or 10,000 people on your quote list. I mean, that's plenty. So you're already there with the number. Now you have to become a personality and be strong and consistent in your beliefs. That doesn't mean you can't evolve, like Arianna Huffington. Huffington Post, I do some blogs for her once in a while, and she and I couldn't agree on anything, okay, as far as what we believe politically, except for the fact that it's okay to change, okay, to evolve, and she's done that, and she's got the largest cult following politically in the world, okay, nobody'd vote for her for president, but she really has mass control over a very large group of people, and she loves Obama. Don't be surprised if she is not a major factor in him winning. You do the same exact thing and tell people, you know, mirror their beliefs. Don't go around trying to figure out what their beliefs are and try to mirror them. Instead, you just come out and say what you believe to be true, and then people will cling to you. And once you've now connected on another thing, like say I'll just do the math of cults for you, okay? So you have 10,000 people on your, quote, list. Okay, well, it is a list at this point. So now you say, okay, I cannot believe what John McCain is doing or Barack Obama or whoever. And now you're going to torque off 50% of the people. We know that, okay? You're left with 5,000 people. And these 5,000 people now, they're going, that Corey kid's a pretty smart guy. But he could be wrong about other stuff, and I still don't trust him yet. And then all of a sudden, next week, you're like, you know what? People are saying stuff about video games, how they're bad for kids and all that kind of stuff. What a crock. There's this new piece of research from the UK, by the way. There's also a piece from the University of Iowa this week that says that the exact opposite. But there's this piece from UK that says video games don't do anybody any harm. All of a sudden, you relieve the guilt of thousands of people who are currently playing video games and don't want to believe that it could be potentially violent. So now you have shown that you don't like either McCain or Obama or somebody in politics that's very polarizable, and then you've connected with him on something else. Now people go, God, this kid is smart. Now, why are you smart, Corey? You're smart because you agreed with them on two things, okay? The definition of a genius is somebody who agrees with me on most things, okay? Right? And this is what you do. So now you've torqued off 5,000 people. You've lost perhaps 10% because they just don't believe you at all anymore. But what do you care? Because 5,000 people have now, or 4,000 or 3,000 have now connected with you at a very powerful level. Now, the next time you say something like, you know what, I want you to go to Ben Mech's seminar in Atlanta next month. I'm just making this up. I don't know if Ben's going anywhere next month. But wherever Ben's going next month, go see him talk. And just don't listen to him, actually. Just do what he says to do. And frame it in such a way that it's a cool thing to do. And so you as an affiliate are now, say you're Ben's affiliate, and you're now driving people to Ben's event, they come back, and as long as you pre-frame it so that they're going to know what they're going to get, because Ben can be polarizing, so can I, so can Dave Licani, so can Jeffrey Gittimer, okay? Mm-hmm. So can every good speaker out there who's going to make a difference in somebody's life, okay? All the Pablum guys, and I'm not going to go list all of them. It's a very long list. You talk about lists. But the Pablum guys don't really influence people profoundly. They don't change people's lives. They think they do short-term, but they really don't. The guys who make a difference are the people who take a stand and that you, Corey, can identify with. And now these people identify with you. You say, so week one, you say Obama sucks. Beat week two, you say whatever truth you have about video games, for example, is off the top of my head. And then week three, you say, oh, by the way, you really do need to go see Ben Mech. Now, all of a sudden, out of the remaining 2,500, we've cut the half and half, maybe 2%. See you later. My computer's talking to me. You know, you've cut down maybe 2%. Go. You get 50 people to go see Ben or 10 people or whatever. You get paid your affiliate commission. People go down there. They know exactly what to expect. They come back and they go, you know what? That guy, he really was wild. Man, he was all over the boards talking about all this bizarre stuff. But you know what? I came back exactly like you said. He talked about stuff that was marketing and emailing strategies. Totally disagree with that Kevin Hogan idiot completely about the size of a list. You should have seen him go. He was talking about all this. See how, and then they come back and then they email you and say, you were so right. And now you've been right three times. And now you've beaten most people's definition of proof. And you now have 1,000 followers.
I see. So like if I have a, you know, my list is mainly like internet marketing newbies, folks that are like just kind of getting in the, you know, in the mix of doing internet marketing and setting their website up. Like, would you recommend discussing things like politics and, you know,
yeah, why not? Because these people, you know, internet marketers, you know, we're all internet marketers, I guess. I mean, you know, Corey, 3 years ago, you know, 4 years ago, I got divorced, and I had a son, daughter, wanted to spend more time with them. It was absolutely necessary at the time. I was doing professional speaking all around the world all the time. And then I decided, well, you know what, I can't do that if I want to be, like, normalizing real life. So I'm going to do, you know, five times the business on the internet, take away $250,000 off of the road, and I'm just going to do it. It's not like you ever sit there and think, God, I wonder if I'll be able to earn, you know, $500,000 on the web. You're going to do it because you're going to simply have that strong personality. You're going to connect with those thousands of people, and you're going to tell them things, you know. Now, I don't know if I'd go as far as what Ben does, which is having these lengthy, super long rants that aren't necessarily articles. He interweaves a lot of his stuff with the sales message, which can be very effective, but I wouldn't try to emulate it right away. I would much rather you have two sections to your email. The first thing is saying, hey, did you see what Obama said today? He called this lady sweetie, and everybody got torqued off. He was in front of a crowd of people. This is true, by the way. This happened today. And some woman was interviewing him or asking questions from the audience, and he says, you know, sweetie, here's the deal. And he answered this question. And everybody freaked out like he had committed some crime. This is so typical of America. This is what freaks Europeans out about us. So he comes on there and he says, I'm sorry. And the lady gets on TV and says, you know what? I'm not that thrilled about this guy, but who cares? You know, I've been called a lot worse than that. But all of a sudden, Obama gets a lot of votes because, you know, this weird energy that gets people are now sought and they go after and they look at Obama video. You do the same thing. Talk about that. Bring it up. Let people get polarized to your point of view or agree with you strongly, okay? And just talk about it for two paragraphs and then say, okay, well, whatever. Anyway, this week, you know, Mark Horn has this really new cool product coming out. I want you to look at the possibility of buying it. You don't have to do this one. I mean, he'll have it for sale next week, too, and, you know, it'll still be there. But there is a good reason to get it this week because I'm going to add in this bonus. Don't do it if you don't want to. I don't care. But if you want to, go for it. And that's the structure. Now, that's, you know, 3,000 words is going to be what I just said, but that's the concept. If you utilize this concept, you let people connect to you, and then you have your sales presentation, your sales letter immediately after that. It's a very, very effective strategy. And when you look at all the people who are really making money on the Internet, John Reese, Rick Sheffrin, I mean, all these guys, you know, who are doing really well, this is exactly what they do, you know. Sometimes they actually come back and apologize for their point of view later on. So they make their $3 million on their point, and then they'll say, you know what, I was wrong to have said that. I always love that. But anyway, does this help? I mean, are we doing better? Is this good, Corey?
You are doing fantastic. I just muted Corey out just because we've got 4 minutes to wrap up the call.
Oh, boy, sorry about that.
It's a delight to have you with us. We're honored and pleased. And we've got three more questions. I know that we're not going to presently have time to go through those because I want to make sure that we let our listeners know that we let our listeners know where to go to get on your coffee list. But let me bring one up. Let me honor who has asked questions, and that is that we have a question from Arlena in Houston. I'll just read off the questions, and you can address them as you like, Kevin. And Arlena in Houston says, do you consider professional sports a cult or promotes a cult-like lifestyle? And asks, is there intentional mind control involved? Then the other question that came up was from Manju in India, who asks, how do you begin building your cult-like following when you don't have a list to send to? What are the first steps to branding yourself online? For example, how do you project yourself on your website? These are complex questions that we can't possibly answer in the 3 minutes we have together. Kevin, where can folks go to get more information about you?
Really respect the questions. I think professional sports certainly has a cult-like atmosphere to it, and that doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. It's just, you know, you don't let your own kids pretend like they're going to become sports players someday because the chances are so tiny. It's a good way to kill off a kid's life. Okay, but Coffee with Kevin Hogan, go subscribe. Now, don't read it very carefully. Don't become part of the cult. But go to kevinhogan.com. Kevin Hogan, KevinHogan.com, and just subscribe. You get a couple of cool books. There's a really neat book called Mind Access that comes with that. It's 150 pages or something, and I wrote it maybe 5-6 years ago. We sold it for a lot of money, and then we just decided to give it away. It turned out to be a great strategy. You get to look at that. And there's a couple other giveaways, too, that are really cool. They're not like throwaways. They're like cool things to have. And don't buy anything. Like, give it at least a month before you send me a check.
Yeah, that is awesome. And before we sign off, Mark Horn, do you have a final question or a sentiment to share with our listeners and Kevin Hogan?
Just my special thanks to Dr. Hogan for being the guest for the answer to the ginger peach tea question and also the other answers that you shared. And just to let folks know who are listening, you can click on the button on the replay page where you'll be able to listen to the replay of the call. The button is in the lower right-hand corner, the big gray button that says the magic button, and that will take you right over to Kevin's space where you can simply put your name and your email address in, and you'll start receiving coffee with Kevin.
Kevin, what are your last words for our listeners before we go our separate ways to enjoy our evenings?
Think about all the successful people you know. They're unique. when they talk about differentiation, G. Abraham style, that's what he means. They're unique. They have special, unique beliefs, and they're willing to say them in public. What are you willing to say? How are you willing to be unique? And can you handle the heat that's going to come? If you can, you'll be in 6 and 7 digits in a very short amount of time.
Awesome. For those listening, I encourage you to go to invisiblebranding.com, share your opinions, your perspectives, your comments on tonight's call. We look forward to spending more time with you in the future. We're excited to have Jason Moffitt in an upcoming call. Excited to have David Doyle, one of the producers of so many of the poker TV series that you see out there. And I know that the one thing on this planet that we all share in exact and equal amounts is time. We're so grateful for your having shared your time with us. Thank you so much, everybody. Good night.
Good night, everybody.